Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
I think we might have just created a little bit of mayhem for ourselves. How you might have to.
I don't know whether I ever did Paint Your Wagon. You ever seen a movie Paint Your Wagon?
Go on.
I was born under a wandering star. Notice it. I was born under a wandering star. This is my American accent. Boots are made for walking. That's what I'm gonna do. These boots are made for walking. I'm gonna walk all over you. So, that's a great movie. You know who that was? I think it was Lee Marvin.
I think we've dug a little grave for ourselves today because we have asked our team to just throw out randoms for us, and we're going to do a random conversation based on. We're going to do a random conversation based on their questions.
Okay, go.
So, first question.
Mills, what is it like working with an ex-con?
Well, I think her fantasy... Well, can I answer that for you? Was your fantasy to work with an ex-con?
No, okay, it wasn't.
It's a bit of a pointy question. How
would you like me to answer that question, Rich?
I don't know. Let's get all criminal on my ass.
I actually don't see that as a part of what when I'm working with you, so it doesn't affect. That's a really boring answer, I know. But it doesn't actually work.
You could have made it spicier than that.
No, it doesn't actually work like that. Yeah. When I see you or when I work with you, I understand that you are all of who you are, and the things that you've done and the things you've been and the things you've experienced in your life bring to you what I experience. But I don't label that as a, you know, as
when you first found out, you know, when you first started seeing me, when did you first work out that I'd been to prison? When you started seeing
well,
me,
when you told me
as a client. Oh, when I told
when you?
You
told me, yeah.
When did I tell you?
You told me in one of the seminars.
How far into the relationship was it? I told you in one of the seminars.
It was one of the seminars. Yeah. No, we were upfront about it at the start, right? So it didn't mean anything to me because I wasn't there for that. It was you just telling that story as a part of you explaining your life. But I was there to do something for myself. So it just was a part. It's always been a part. I've always been interested in it. I ask you lots of questions because for me it's not about it's just to find out how you were thinking and what was going on because you were a kid when that happened. It wasn't like, you were a kid, the way I see it anyway. And I feel like those are the things that you bring to the table to assist you in your life now because all those experiences make you into the person you are now. Mm. And that doesn't mean that it's good or bad. I just don't see it like that. I don't label it like that. Do you know what I mean? I joke about it like that sometimes, when you think you're more notorious than you actually are.
I am notorious.
You actually are not.
I am so notorious.
It is so funny that first time we came back from overseas together, like you're just like
coming into the Australian airport. Listen, they're probably going to pull me over here, Mills. So I'm just letting you know. And they're like, "Go on ahead, sir. No problem. Have a lovely day, Mr. Bean."
I'm not as notorious as I thought I was.
How did you meet each other?
I met Amelia through her brother. Her brother was seeing me on a one-on-one basis, and
My brother had done the seminar.
He'd done the seminar, yeah,
and he'd apparently known you for a while prior to that.
Yeah, he'd done some one-on-one stuff with me.
So
and then you came into the seminar.
Actually, what happened was he called me and said, "I've just booked in to do a seminar."
Yeah.
And back in those days, when he called me to tell me, the phone cost from a mobile to mobile was like exorbitant. So you never stayed on the phone. And he was a car salesman, so he'd never stayed on the phone for longer than like a minute until the next person walked into the yard. He went, "Hey, how you going?" "Oh, good. I've got to go because someone's in the yard." So we'd never have long conversations when he was at work. This particular day, he called me and he said, "I've just booked in to do something." And he was talking to me about it, and we spent an hour talking. And I remember that day thinking, oh, there's something in this for me. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And then that was the first time I'd heard about you without knowing who you were. And then the rest is history.
Yeah.
And then I think I started coming in and going, okay, I think you should change this and let's work on this and fix this up.
Because I was never really good at I think even with the books and the manuals, I was never good at writing and organizing. You know,
that's what happens.
I'm dyslectic.
So. No, it's about delegating. Dyslectic. So we delegated the things that we were not as good at to the other.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how we met many, 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 many years ago.
Mitch, what's it like working with an ex-school teacher?
Ex-chalky. I never really saw Amelia as a school teacher. She was really good. Amelia's always been very good at organizing me. She's always been very good at putting it all together and making it all actually work. And like, I'll head off on a tangent and Amelia will come in and she'll simplify it and she'll put order to it. And that's been magical. But I think, I never really saw Amelia as a school teacher. So I don't. Yeah, I just think that she brought order to my life.
Isn't that funny though? Because it's funny because we've both been asked that question now, and it's like, well, you know, we don't really see it that way.
Yeah.
I think we came into it just like, this is who you are now, and this is who I am now, and you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I think you were kind of already out of being a school teacher when I met you. Anyway, you didn't want to be a school teacher anymore.
Well, it's not that I didn't. I loved part of it, but it wasn't all of that. Yeah, but. Yeah, I wonder if we'd met 10 years ago, whether...
We met longer than 10 years ago, mate.
No, I mean 10 years before is I meant, you know.
Check out the brain on the screen.
Actually, no. we discovered that we were in the same places at the same time.
Actually, that's very important because when I used to go to the rave club, the Berlin club.
Yeah.
And I would, on a Saturday night, I'd be partying, you know, raving away. And on the Friday night, Millsy was in there watching the band 1927. Like, who's 1927? Like, honestly, who's 1927?
The only time I went to the Berlin Club back in those days, and it was to see 1927.
And the funny thing is, like, I was like, who's 1927? And she's going, oh, I love 1927. This Australian rock band. I'm like, I have no idea. And then it turns out that he's our neighbour. He lives... The lead singer lives in my suburb, just
That's
around
right.
the corner from me.
I know, I fangirled so much over him when I saw him at the cafe that day.
I have a really funny story. I've just been in Bali with Lola and Lola was on the dance floor and there was this other little Asian girl on the dance floor.
it was so cute.
Funny. There's this other little Asian girl on the dance floor. Lola does...
dance, gym.
No, gym. Lola does gym, so she can do splits and all that sort of. But this girl was also flexible. And the girl was probably about a year older than Lola. And Lola was, everything the girl was doing, Lola subconsciously was copying. And then this went on for ages, like for an hour, you know. And then there was like this battle going on, and Lola would, this girl would do something, and then Lola would copy it, and then push her hair back. She'd push her hair back and go. Then she'd do something else, and Lola would push her hair back and go. She'd do. And then Blair Harding comes over and goes, watch what Lola's doing. She's like in this battle with this girl. Very, very, very
where,
cute.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I just thought it was cute.
Okay,
another question. Come on.
Mills, when did you first experience that moment?
My aha moment?
Got it.
Okay. I'm going to cry.
Got this shit.
I won't go into the whole backstory.
Oh, don't.
Right? I won't. But I guess that for me, one of my things was that is not fair. That is totally not cool.
Sorry, go on.
Okay. So one of the things for me was that in my life, I knew that I was loved intellectually, but I didn't necessarily feel it. So I felt it from certain people. And I'd experienced some things in my life and I felt like I'd done some things in my life that I was not okay with, right? And so I came to getting my moment was for me about getting that I was loved no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my moment. So when you talk about your moment, your moment was very... massive. It was a massive in the sense that you had gone through so much, right? Just before you were experiencing that, that you went into experience it, that when you went to experience it was life or death for you, you know? So when it was such a big thing that it was like this white light overwhelmingly, it was a massive thing. For me, it was massive, but it didn't have that same, what's the word? My experience of it wasn't the same. It was quieter, do you know? And I really got in that moment that I was worthy of love.
Mm.
Like that very first thing that I got was that I was worthy of love.
Mm.
And I had never imagined that it was possible for me to feel that way,
mm.
that I was fully worthy of love.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very overwhelming. But it was actually after – it was the events that transpired after the moment as well that really solidified that, because I'd really felt like I'd done some stuff that I hadn't been proud of and I wasn't clear on. And I remember it was after you found out about it, and I knew it was – I had this thought in my mind that the only way for me to get over – what had happened or what I thought had happened or whatever was just to bring someone into my life, tell them everything that I'd ever done, and then maybe shoot them later, because then I would have got everything on my chest.
And killed them
so there's no one left to tell the story, you know. And obviously I wasn't going to ever kill anybody, but it was just the concept of I just want to be able to tell somebody, because I feel like if I get it off my chest, I'll have told somebody – but not have anybody know about it. So like maybe if someone was on their deathbed so that they could go away and I'd never, you know, I felt like that was how I was going to clear. But not long after my moment in that regard, you found out about some of what had happened. And I remember going in and I was avoiding going anywhere near you, because I remember feeling like I didn't know how it was going to be taken. You know, I didn't know how it was going to be taken, and I didn't know how I was going to feel as a result of you knowing. And I remember I just made some joke, you know, and just went, "You never picked that, then, did you?" And you just looked at me, and I can't even look at you when I'm saying, but you just looked at me and you just put your hand here and you sort of said, "Here," as if for me to put my head on your shoulder. And I just cried for about 10 minutes, and I just felt for the first time ever that I was loved, not for what I'd done, but for who I was, you know. That for me was a big, big moment. I had my moment, but that moment led to the other moments in my life that have really been – I mean, I've had lots of profound moments.
Yeah.
But that for me was the first time I truly felt loved for who I was, you know.
I think that's a really important point, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, is that, you know, in our lives we're loved for who we are and not for what we've done. And I feel sometimes that lots of people get around the world thinking that they're the sum of their actions, and you're not the sum of your actions, you're the sum of what resides in your heart, because people see beyond your actions.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
They see who you are, you know, deep inside of yourself and in your heart.
Yeah, and you don't see that.
Mm.
Other people see it, but you don't necessarily see it, and you think that all they can see, because before that moment I thought all they could see was all of this bad stuff about me, or all of this who I wasn't.
The other thing is that, you know, when you think you've done something bad in your life, right? Yeah. You kind of feel that at any moment in time, you know, you kind of feel like you have to hide it all the time.
Yes.
And you can, you know, I've seen situations where people have felt, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to walk into a situation and somebody's going to know, somebody's going to pick it up.
I've always felt like that.
You know, somebody's going to see, "Oh, you did that," you know. Yeah. And the only reason that we think that we've done something really bad in our lives is because we think we're the only person in the world that
that's ever done it.
You know, we think we're the only person in the world that has ever done what we feel that we've done. You know, and it's very freeing to realize that in some way we've all thought or done everything.
Everything, you know? Absolutely. Yeah,
we've all thought or done, really thought or done everything.
Absolutely. You
know? Yeah. Okay, that was a good question.
I don't think you've ever loved me as much as you did in that moment. You teased me so much after that. But that was good.
Okay, any other questions?
I didn't expect that.
How do your loved ones handle you being so open and honest?
It's funny, I suppose sometimes the people who are the closest to us sometimes are, I think, struggle more in a sense, I'll put it this way. I spent almost 30 years of my life being a particular way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or acting a particular way. And then after that point, it was like the person that I always was back there kind of got released and kind of got, you know. And that was definitely a transition for people around me. That was my friends, that was my family, that was my colleagues. It was a transition for everyone. And it was a transition not because the essence of me was different, but the expression of me out in the world was different. Do you know what I mean? Like the essence of me was the same the whole way along, but I would sort of withdraw and not necessarily communicate some of what was in my heart prior to that point.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also I didn't have the language to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So it was like before that point, I'm like, no, I know there's something different, but I didn't have the words to communicate that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would stay quiet because even though I felt different, because I felt different or I felt that I thought different right from a very, very, very young age. I remember being at about 5 or 6 years old.
But I think everybody does that.
I think we've discussed this before and you said that as well, and I tend to agree. I think a lot of people do that.
They think, am I the only one that is this
way? That thinks this way, And so I think that what happened for me is that I went through a bit of a transition in that time, and I either lost people around me or I lost the old relationship that I had with people around me. Does that make sense? Because it's like it didn't mean that everybody left my life, but the relationship that I have with people around me is just a different relationship now, because I know now firstly I can give words to how I was feeling before, and also now I'm a different person in the sense that I'm more of the person I was before all the other stuff has kind of fallen away. So I think now as I communicate, I think people know that I'm who I am and what I'm communicating from and that person that I'm communicating from. And so that my relationship had to transform with the people around me as a result of that, you know. So my family have always loved me no matter what. How I communicate now is just different. So we've gone through a process of transitioning through that for me anyway, because it was mine for me anyway, was a marked difference. Do you know what I mean? Because I was really, really, really suppressing. I mean, you remember meeting me. I was just a totally different person, totally suppressing all of who I was because I felt like I couldn't be that expression of who I was. I wasn't going to be loved for that. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, no, this is me. Take me as I am. And so sometimes that can be quite
challenging
for people. Do you know what I mean? But it's been good because it's been good to see the transition in my relationships as a result of that.
Yeah.
And the people that were not meant to be a part of this part of my life are not around for that. But that doesn't mean that there's any hard feelings or any problems
season,
there.
Reason, yeah, lifetime, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, you know, I grew up in, I challenged everything from when I was very young with my dad. I had the space to be able to do that. My dad was conscious enough to be able to handle that. And I challenged his views on lots of things. You know, I challenged his views on religion, on money, on wealth, and I think as I got older, you know, there was a point where he kind of let go. You know, I think at about 15, I remember having a conversation with him, and he said to me, you know, I was challenging him about this God thing. And he said to me, son, you know, I really feel as if I failed in you because I haven't been, because he was just...
Because he couldn't answer you.
Because he couldn't answer my question, because I was like, you know, prove to me there's this God thing. And he said, wow, I really feel as if I failed in you. And that had he didn't realize the effect that had in my life. But from that point on, I really started to think, okay, I want to know what's going on here. You know, I don't want to follow any religion or philosophy or book or Bible. I want to know something. There's a greater reason for this. What is happening here? Some of this just doesn't make sense, and I wanted it to make sense. And so I think they knew I was a bit rogue from the beginning, you know. And then I remember, you know, as I got older, you know, I remember there was a time where families are weird things. My family has been broken up and come back and broken up and come back and broken up and come back. And I think that's just a natural cycle of what happens. You know, one minute you're close to one brother, the next minute you're close to the next. Or
yeah.
One parent and then the next. But I think there was a time, I remember there was a time in the house and, you know, the family had been through a lot, you know. And there was a time we were in the house and I was sitting around a dinner table with the family and... there was a couple of Ray's workmates there as well. And a topic came up and I was just watching, observing what was going on at the family. It was always the same thing, you know. My mum always played this particular role that I perceived was kind of the victim. My dad was always the jester, you know, always cracking the jokes. And there was no connection. He was just crack a joke and that's how he would connect. And he's still that way today. And I love that about him. My mum's still that way today. And it was just my perception at the time. My mum is amazing. And I remember sitting there and watching all these characters play out. You know, my brother was the aggressor. And I remember one of the guys asking me what I do. And I'd always kind of...
avoided it.
Well, yeah. I'd always kind of dumbed it down a bit. I'd always kind of, you know, just glazed over what I did. And then this particular day, I just let loose and I just spoke about what I actually do and what we actually do with people, how we actually get people to break through and some of the situations I've helped people through. And I spoke about my particular breakthrough. And I remember my two brothers sitting back like that and my mom and dad sitting back like that. And my dad just went quiet. And it was my brother pulled me aside first, who was a practicing Buddhist. He pulled me aside first and went, man, you know, where did you get all that from? What, tell me more about what you did. And then my other brother did it. And then I think it was really the time when my mum and dad were able to let go a little bit. At that moment, they realized, he's all right. He's got it. Right. He's got it because he's got it more than we've got it.
Yeah.
He seems to have an understanding of what's going on more than our understanding. And then they wanted to understand more. Does that make sense? And I think it wasn't long after that they actually ended up in one of my information nights, standing there listening to what I had to say.
Right,
and that was really the catalyst for that.
Yeah.
You know, because then those three women that were at the table that were my brother's workmates, they all ended up coming through.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah. I remember you telling me about that conversation. Mm. So funny how we play small. Like we shrink so that everybody feels comfortable. And I remember doing that right at the very beginning, and I remember
it has its pros and its cons.
Of course,
it costs people in one way and it pays in another way.
Of course,
But the best thing to do is just be yourself.
Well, and that was really
the day where I just decided I'm just going to be myself.
Yeah, that's what I realized, is that in order for me to shrink, I had a place in which I was shrinking from, that I was this. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, for me to be shrinking, I was this and I was just shrinking from the potential of who I was, and that wasn't going to serve me to that degree any longer. I wanted just to step up into that, you know. Mm. Obviously, there's different degrees of that. It's interesting how we do that, though.
Yeah.
Who would play you in a movie?
Straight up Sean Penn. Who'd play you?
Okay. So I'm going to challenge that.
Why?
Because
I love Sean Penn.
I know you love Sean Penn.
He kind of looks like me, doesn't he?
He does. He tries to
look like me all
the time.
He
used to. I think he's not so much anymore. But isn't there that Australian actor that you always get –
You can't put me in with an Australian actor.
No, but there's this Australian actor.
It's
literally –
like putting me in with a Bengali actor.
Oh, that's not fair. fair.
It's like putting me in with, honestly, it's like putting me in with an actor from the North Pole. What's his name?
I can't remember his name. But every time you go into certain places and they're like, what movie are you in now?
That happens all the time.
In
the airport. There's a woman in the airport serves coffee in Melbourne and goes, so what shoot? Are you off to a shoot now? Or where are you guys going?
What is the guy's name?
Is it Simon? Stephen Curry.
There you go.
Who would play you?
I actually don't know.
Judy Garland.
Dorothy. She's dead, Mitch.
I don't know. Come on, who?
I don't know.
Angelina Jolie.
No.
Yes.
I don't know.
Angelina Jolie.
I'm not really productive with an answer with the question, but I...
Oh, come on. Everybody knows.
I actually don't. I've not thought about it that far ahead.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't help you with that.
Give me another question.
Queen Latifah.
Oprah
Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey got my answer.
Yeah. That bitch ain't getting that role.
Okay.
Bananas?
Yeah.